Hello everybody, it's John, and I'm talking again to Sarah Browning about her work in connection with the graveyard at Christchurch in Dunbarton. And she's telling us at the moment about some of the more interesting graves that she's come across. Some of the stories are quite mind-blowing, really, and I think you'd be interested in this one that she's got for us today. So over to you, Sarah.
Hello. Yes, this grave today is one of my personal graves. It's one that I've adopted, and it's one of those ones where if you're walking through, anyone who's been in a graveyard, you'll see something that catches your eye, whether it's decoration or it's a name.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sort of think, what is that? And this one, I took a photograph of it, and I went home thinking, I have got to know what's going on here. And the inscription on the stone reads, "In memory of Wild Smith Burchell, native of Arundel, Sussex, who died August 3rd, 1839, aged 20 years. This stone was placed by his disconsolate mother to perpetuate the memory of a beloved son, the youngest of 10 children, suddenly left orphans in the year 1820. So, number one, his name.
Right.
Wild Smith Burchell, that's a fantastic name. Yeah. Number two, he's from Sussex. Why is he in Dunbarton? And the phrasing of that final bit saying it's placed by his mother, but 10 children suddenly left orphans in the year 1820. And our knowledge of the word orphans is they have no parents. So how did his mother travel forward in time to place a gravestone? So there were a few things that caught my eye about it. So with that name and that epitaph, you'll have to ask, who was this? His entry in the burial register told me almost everything I needed to know, but I can't tell his story in the right order by telling it in the order I learned it. So his story in order is that Wild Smith Burchell, and that can be spelt several different ways in the records. On the stone, it's B-U-R-C-H-E-L-L. He was born in 1819 and baptized at St. Nicholas, which was Arundel's parish church. His parents were James Burchell and Anne Coker Burchell, who were married in Reading in 1797. James and Anne did indeed have 10 children, but James died in 1820, just a few days shy of a year after Wildsmith, the baby of the family, was baptized. So, like I said, the use of the word orphan in the epitaph threw me for a loop until I worked this out. It's a more archaic use of the term. It just means that they were left fatherless.
Fatherless, yes, right.
So left widowed at the age of 44 with 10 children, which can't have been fun, Anne soldiered on her own. James had been a baker, and his income was likely not a very high one. But as I say, Anne didn't remarry, and she stayed in the area. Other Burchells can be found in the baptism records for St. Nicholas, so she may have had a decent level of family support and not felt the need to, you know, have to remarry for financial security. One of those other Burchells, Arthur, was a sergeant major in the 19th Light Division. Maybe that's where Wildsmith got the idea of joining the armed forces, and he became a dragoon, a member of the 1st Royal Dragoons, in fact, which must have been exciting for him.
Yeah.
So at this point in the 1800s, you could join the army as young as age 17. So he wasn't likely to have been serving for very long before he died. I couldn't find an army record for when he actually joined. But we know from his burial record that he was a member.
I see.
So you're probably wondering why he's here in Dunbarton like I was. And the answer lies partly at the feet of Honest John. Because in November 1838, when there was mass resistance to the new poor law legislation that had been passed 4 years earlier, the speed and fierceness of the response of the people alarmed the authorities so much that they called in the army to keep peace in Dunbarton. And when I say called in the army, that they basically marched up and down the street a lot.
Yes,
they didn't really enforce a great deal.
No, in terms of fight.
It's the presence.
An
it's the sight
presence.
Of them. And who came when they were called? The Royal Dragoons. That's how he got there.
So do you know, was he based locally then?
Yes. Yeah, the barracks were on York Street, I believe.
In Dunbarton?
Either York Street or Salford, I can't remember. Yes.
Oh,
yeah, the army was actually barracked in Dunbarton. Occasionally, there would be unrest in Hebden Bridge or other areas.
Yeah.
and the newspapers will mention the dragoons having had to sort of mobilize and come down from Dunbarton to deal with the problems. Yes. Yeah.
Good.
And it was a sort of a rotating roster of dragoons from different areas.
Right.
So I don't know when Wildsmith arrived, if he arrived right at the beginning and he was here for a year, or if he was sort of part of a later intake. But there were dragoons in Dunbarton until the end of August 1839, which is when they were told to stand down. Right. And at that point, that particular division were sent back to Sheffield. So that's where they'd been called in from.
Ah, I see.
They wouldn't all have been from Sheffield, but it was
that
where
was
they
the
were.
Headquarters, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how Wildsmith got here, and that's why he was here when he died. So the next question is, how did he die?
Yes, of course.
Because you don't tend to see that in burial registers. Sometimes there'll be a mention of a body being exhumed for an inquest, or buried, you know, post-inquest or on advice of such and such coroner. So sometimes you get a little bit of a clue that something's up, but there's nothing on his record saying anything like that. Like I say, sometimes the army would be sent out to different places.
Yeah.
So on the 2nd of August, 1839, there was unrest in Hebden Bridge when a number of mill workers had been given indications that they might not be paid. And they went on a part angry, part drunken rampage. And the dragoons were required to mobilize and come down to keep the peace. And Wildsmith died on the 3rd of August, so I wondered if it was related to that. But there's no record of any violence occurring or any incidents on that day, just that they were sent down and that they broke everything up.
Yeah, I see.
So I had to order his death certificate from the GRO, which if there's a, when you look for a death online, if they, post 1837, everything's in the General Registry Office index, or the GRO index, and they'll have a volume and page number.
Yeah, see,
and
yeah.
It's £7 for a PDF to be ordered from the government website. You just have to give them the person's name, the quarter of the year that their death was registered in, and the volume and page number, and then they email it to you.
I see.
It's pretty good. So I ordered it, and it arrived, and it said that he died of consumption. So he probably wasn't in Hebden Bridge that day.
Oh.
there was a red herring, newspaper red herring there.
So I would imagine consumption in those days was a fairly common cause of death. Yes.
In 1840, actually, it was 1 in 4 died of consumption or tuberculosis. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And that continued up until the 1880s. Yeah. It was very much the leading cause of death for a long time in Britain.
Goodness me.
Which was, it's pre-penicillin, pre-medication. You know, it's, if you've ever had a bad case of bronchitis, you'd be amazed how many death certificates have bronchitis as cause of death.
Right.
Back in those days. Chest complaints could kill you.
Yeah.
Even a mild chest complaint could kill you.
Right.
So he wouldn't have been well enough to go out at all. And another little sidetrack I went on after getting the certificate was the witness who sort of certified the death with the doctor was somebody named Robert Daughters, which is just a very interesting name. And I thought, well, who's he? And he was from Bermondsey, and he'd also joined the army. And he must have been serving in the same dragoon regiment.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, he wasn't a surgeon. Well, he was just another. He certified it along with the doctor, by which it means he was the one who said he died at this time, and I was with him when he died.
Like a witness,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah, exactly. So I did sort of see what happened to him, and he stayed in the army until he was blinded in combat at some point, and he was sent to a Chelsea hospital. So he was a Chelsea pensioner, essentially, at a relatively young age. Because when we get to the 1851 census, he's living with his parents, and it lists on the census that he's blind and that he's under occupation Chelsea pensioner.
Yes,
so he would have been, you know, fairly unwell. And he died in 1857, so about 18 years after Wildsmith.
After Wildsmith,
yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Goodness me.
The last thing, going back to the burial register, it's also interesting because his entry actually gives us an idea of what the graveyard would have looked like at that point.
Which
we don't really have a lot of photographs of that bit of the church until about 1880s or so. But the death registry reads, Wildsmith Burchell, Private 1st Regiment Dragoons, buried in new ground at the foot of the lilac, aged 20 years. So there would have been a big lilac bush at that part of the graveyard, which is the slope coming
down from the church. Yeah, I see.
Before you get to the little path that leads to the school.
Right.
So, unfortunately, lilacs are an invasive bush, so we're not going to be planting any lilacs in the graveyard to bring it back to how it looks, because we'll have to be hacking them out in perpetuity if we do.
Yeah.
But it paints a really lovely little picture.
And that was in the new part of the graveyard at that time.
Exactly, yes. It wasn't around the church or at the back. It was the new
quite a
section.
Sort of rural setting, I suppose, in those days.
Yes, yes. Well, the whole bit at the front are all more modern graves. It would have just been green lawn all the way down to the river,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So the poor lad, he died of consumption. He was in the army and...
far from home.
Far from home.
Very young.
Yes. Tragic. Well, thanks for that. Yeah. That's another really interesting one. I shall look forward to some more of these, Sarah.
Thank you.